Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China lowers the bank reserve requirements again. The Greece deal is on and, well, now it's off. On, who knows. Natural gas prices are up. Oil is up. The markets are up. And our guest today, Fausto Puglisi, the founder of Cyber Trading University, to talk to us about trading and all things about the markets. All this and lots more on episode number 251 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey there, it's Andrew Horowitz, and it is now coming in already towards the end of February, February 20th of 2012, and we are seeing a wonderful market rally, a strong uptrend that has been going on since the beginning of the year. That kind of clock struck 12, and everybody said, I want to buy stocks! Amazing how the turnaround happened. But really, what was it all about? It was all about the fact that we had some optimism that was greeted by some better-than-expected economic news, particularly from the United States, and we also saw a massive infusion of capital, money, stimulus from everywhere around the world. You look about what happened to the yen recently. It's hitting out close to about 80, which is a big move from about 76, weakening because there was a tremendous amount of stimulus put into the markets in Japan because they were hitting, I guess, their the third consecutive quarter of negative growth, much worse than was expected. We see that China, yes, they have reduced the reserve requirements again. India also has loosened up their policy. Brazil did the same thing, and it's happening all over the world. And what we're seeing is that investors are taking that as a green light, the thumbs up, the go signal for buying risk assets. The dollar kind of moved down, and that has been helping to push up the prices of commodities. And that has been very good for oil, although that's not good for the gas pump. We see a move of about, I guess, close to about 10% already this year in the price of gas. And it is expected to go much higher. In fact, over the weekend, there was some additional, well, provocation in the area of the Middle East, some additional problems that have been surfacing. And Iran has now stopped the delivery and exportation of their oil to several different European countries. Importers, and in particular France and the UK, and who knows from there where it goes. And on that, when we have the dollar moving lower, you know, that acts as a negative and a positive. Kind of when one goes up, one goes down. Usually oil is moving higher because it's priced in dollars. So what we're seeing is that oil crude has hit about 103 because of the better than expected and the economic surprises that we talked about a few weeks ago in the U.S., and also because of the fact that the dollar is moving down again. The optimism is creating some interesting little plays out there. You see stocks have been really on fire. As a matter of fact, you could see some of the plays that were out of favor. The growth-oriented investments, the high flyers, price lines, and the companies that are considered the growth plays, not the value plays, not the dividend plays. They're doing okay, but the growth plays, particularly the energy sector, wow, just an amazing move. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to get to the guest a little bit earlier than usual today, and then I'm going to come back because I want to talk to you about what we have coming up next week, which is all about natural gas, something that has been really poo-pooed as, wow, so much of it, prices are going to stay down and go lower forever. But if you saw what happened last week, we actually saw a move over the recent resistance level. And on Thursday, the inventory numbers came out. They always come out at 10:30 on Thursdays. 10:30 on Wednesdays is the Department of Energy oil numbers. In the evening on Tuesdays is the API numbers, which we don't look at as much as the morning of Wednesdays for the DOE. But, oil has, the inventories have been rising or at least not been declining as much. And I mean, you have to wonder how far oil is really going to go right now. It's obviously a lot of political instability, the dollar weakening, a little bit of growth optimism. But if you have all that without the actual supply-demand issue, well, we know what's going to happen. It's going to fall flat on its face. So kind of been really concerned about how the oil thing is going to play out. Because what you have right now is a lot of speculation in there. At the same time, the political instability. So that's going to move it higher. But again, if that just stops, if just all collapses upon itself, and that's not really a good thing. Now, when you look at the natural gas thing, which we're going to get into in a moment, there's been a lot of real negativity with that. And that often is a sign of, you know, a turning point. There was a capitulation about 3 weeks ago that we talked about. Hopefully, you picked up some of that when we talked about that. We talked about natural gas. And in fact, 2 days later, Chesapeake came out and they actually cut down on their their production, and that caused a spike of about 8%. Now, Thursday, the inventories were down. Last week, we saw about a 3.5% move. And then on Friday, we saw, once again, some additional dropping of production, and we saw about a 4% move higher on Friday for natural gas. But again, we're going to hold off on that. I thought what we do is we talk a little bit about some of the news, and I wanted to cover some of the important things that are happening right now, get to our guest, and then I have a little bit of a, you know me with my rants. Well, I got a little bit of a rant for those European fellows that I want to touch base on for a second. Let's just say there is no honor amongst thieves or sovereigns at this point. But let's talk about what's going on. I'm going to kind of run down some of the things that you need to be aware of. We have some economics that are coming out next week that are important. CPI was pretty much in line last week. PPI was in line. The leading indicators were actually looking pretty much much better. Close to a 10-month high. Some of that was a stock market move from January that pushed it higher. And I think that when we see all the things that are happening right now with the employment situation, you got to say, hey, it's looking a little bit better. Whether or not we want to believe it, because it's been so just horrible of late, and over the summer we had that, you know, real drawdown, and ECRI is saying, hey, you know what, we see a recession within 6 months, and that was about, I guess about 4 months ago they made that call. We'll see what happens. Oftentimes, when the ECR does make their move and says, hey, a recession is coming, it takes about 6 months to 8 months to actually for it to come. And I don't know why they do it so early, but that's usually the case. We'll see if they're wrong at this point. But here's kind of the things I want to talk about. I talked about the Greece situation. Well, they identified another $427 million in budget cuts. They're going to take this right to the wire. Now, March 20th, there is about, I think, about a 14 million euro bond deal due. They have to pay $14.5 billion. And what's happening right now is this $170 million bailout that's being tossed around and questioned has been really all based on the March 20th deadline, because they need this money to pay off the debt. If they don't do so, it's going to cost a default. Now, they don't want a default there for 100 different reasons, CDS exposure and triggering of those and the insurance basically backing the bonds. But at the same time, they're looking for a 70% haircut. If they do that, then what happens with Portugal and all the other countries that want to do the same? Go back and listen to last week's episode with Das, and you hear a lot about that. But what's interesting is they did come up with $427 million in budget cuts. And when you look at that, what that means is that there's going to be about a 10% reduction in the amount that pensioners are going to be getting. So now there's more rioting going on, there's more hysteria going on, and I don't know. Does anybody really think that if Greece gets this, I don't care if it's $100 billion or $200 billion or $50 billion, that they're going to be able to pay this back? It just doesn't work. The mathematics behind this, it would be great if central banks would put pencil to paper, use a calculator, do something, and figure out, well, this isn't going to work. There's no way it's going to work. Forget about all the things that can happen down the road with other countries and banking industry and all that. Forget that. Let's just talk about the fact that the austerity measures that Greece has on them with an economy that's shrinking 7% year over year, with less people working, less tax collection, there's no way that they're going to be able to pay this debt off. I don't care if they reduce it down to 4% that they have to pay from the exorbitant amount that they're paying right now. It just doesn't work. And then we have China. China is cutting their bank reserve ratios a second time because their exports are crumbling. That's the bottom line. And what they're doing is they're cutting the amount of cash that banks have to put aside for the second time in about 3 or 4 months now. And they're doing this to spur on lending. Why are they doing this? Because we know that there is a big problem with the lending right now, that there's a lot of people that are getting underwater in their deals they did, a lot of leverage that was put on for the real estate industry and in the real estate sector, I should say. And more importantly, I think what's interesting about this is that there was another report over the weekend that showed that the prices of housing and of residential housing in particular has been falling again. I think 47 out of the 80 different regions that were looked at, they were falling, and another one was almost like 80% of the regions were falling, you know, different regions in China. So what's happening is that they're doing this. Why? They're doing this because they said that they need to do something because the cooling property prices are threatening economic growth, and they're blaming it all on European debt crisis. So what they're really trying to do here, which is really bizarre, they're trying to bring back and hold off the slowing of property prices, increase the lending because they want more money in the system. And this will be about $150, $160 billion that they're actually putting in the system if everybody borrows it, and creating additional leverage on situations where they know is already failing. Ugh. Seems to me a little bit distorted view of what's going on. But again, it is another stimulus, another massive amount of money being put into the system. We have the situation in, of course, the Middle East, and there's a big discussion about Israel's attack on Iran would be extremely destabilizing. Well, no kidding. But right now, you know, Iran is doing nothing but creating more and more tension in that area, and that's not going to be good for oil prices, unless you're a buyer of oil, of course, unless you own oil. So there's been some discussion about, there's going to be a big conflict in there and, you know, Israel's not going to do anything, but if they do, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, well, okay, fine. Now, Japan and China are coming together, supposedly. They're going to, this is an interesting story. You know, last week we heard rumor that China is going to step up and they're going to help out in the area of European sovereigns, or at least help out with the whole debt crisis. Again, it was very loosey-goosey, the discussion. Well, now we hear that the finance minister of Japan, Jun Azumi, is saying that the nation is going to work together with China to help solve the European debt crisis. It was interesting, but they're going to do it through the International Monetary Fund. Now, what's really interesting is you gotta separate the BS from reality these days, because, you know, what we talk about rhetoric is becoming propaganda. The rhetoric that is being spewed by all the central banks and various politicians and everybody that just has a microphone these days, which seems to be everybody, is becoming so ridiculous. The IMF is made up of countries that have a requirement to put money into the IMF for different uses. And there's, depending on their size and their GDP and all that, they put money in and the IMF then gets to, you know, do what they have to do to stimulate various places around the world, to save places if they're failing, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Now, Japan comes out with this comment that they're going to help through the IMF. Well, duh, you're helping through the IMF already. We know you are. So basically what you're doing now is just saying this for effect. What are you doing? You're grandstanding this whole discussion and you're linking it up to China to make it. I mean, what are you doing? We know that. But you know what? In the end, most people won't think about this. Investors will just buy the simple discussion of it. And that's good for markets, at least temporarily. If you look at what happened last week, as soon as China came out with this bogus discussion that they're going to help, or at least the discussion was bogus that China was going to help without any kind of specifics behind it, it was great for futures overnight, and then things fell off pretty hard the next day. So we knew that things weren't really kosher when it came to that. So, I mean, you know, you look at that and you say, let's take that with a grain of salt and go from there. Still some big problems in Syria, that the Syrian security forces maintain their crackdown against opponents of the president, al-Assad, and China then, of course, urged an end to the violence. A lot of people being killed, a lot of problems there. It doesn't seem like we're going to step in at all, but we'll see what happens with that. A couple other things here I wanted to mention. I guess there's a new OS from Apple coming out called Mountain Lion. It's going to have an iPhone feature. It's going to have, I guess, a feature, the iCloud integration notification app and Apple messaging services, which is kind of interesting. That would be nice to have that iMessage, I suppose, wouldn't it? I'd like that, actually, on there. And then, I guess, finally, the other news, and we'll get to our guest in right up, is the deal about you know, what's happening in the election process. And there's this interesting little twist going on. Gingrich seemingly isn't being, you know, touted as the real contender right now, but it's Santorum all of a sudden. And now the bickering starts. It looks like there's some real hash going to be thrown around in terms of Romney and Santorum at this point. And I tell you, it's going to get very interesting. Santorum came from a big, you know, behind the scenes kind of nothing. And then all of a sudden he came across on some of the latest polls as being really a very big contender. So that's interesting, I think, in terms of markets, and we'll see where that goes. But at the same time, President Obama's you know, approval ratings are coming up. When you see initial claims, you know, ducking under the four-week moving average by a significant amount, the lowest we've seen in, I guess, about a year and a half, and the 8.3%, whether that's, of course, we know, helped by the labor participation rate, which is the lowest since the 1950s. And at the same time, though, we see more jobs being added, and that all helps. That all helps the current president. I'll tell you something. It's going to be very interesting. We talk about this on DH Unplugged. It's going to be very interesting how much money is going to be spent on campaign media and the media moving forward. And I got to tell you something. It's going to be enormous when President Obama kicks out his campaign, because the amount of money that he's collected with the new rules that allow for basically an unlimited amount to be, you know, paid for by corporations, it's going to be a real blast. You're not going to be able to watch TV without seeing, you know, 20 or 30 commercials every couple of hours that is dealing with the election, and it's going to be plastered on everybody. By the way, it seems like there's so much money going around, we should all get money for wearing pins or something. You know, it's really, at this point, it's buying votes at any cost. But what can I say about that? Let's just get to a couple of facts, and then we'll get right to our guest, and I'm going to come back and talk about Natural Gas Week, the something I think you really want to hear about, and our guest, of course, and then a little discussion of the ECB. But before we do that, I want to mention, of course, GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great sponsor of ours, and we thank them for their support. And I thank you for listening to this and not fast-forwarding and talking about their great products that they have over at GoToMeeting. Because one of the things that you can do here is not only can you do a meeting at these days, I've mentioned this the last few times, but they have this new HD Faces, which is really cool because you could really get face-to-face with the person you're talking to. And, you know, when you're talking to someone from, I don't know, a sales presentation or a lecture, you could basically set up your own class here. And you can go and you could really see what's going on. As a matter of fact, these are the kind of things that we do. This coming Tuesday, we are having a class, and I'm going to be teaching that. If you haven't done so already, make sure to sign up. There'll be a link on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But basically, GoToMeeting is that basic platform where you can simply just log on and talk to somebody and ask questions, have a class or have a sales meeting or just a meeting with your organization or just, you know, talk with somebody about what they're doing about their homework. And GoToMeeting, which is by Citrix, by the way, just takes a simple webcam and click to collaborate in a group so you can do the HD video. And you can see your attendees and your people you're talking to eye to eye while collaborating on documents. Maybe you don't want to in some circumstances. I don't know. But really, you should check it out if nothing else, because it's free for 30 days. You can check it out free for 30 days just by going to GoToMeeting.com, clicking on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code podcast. It's really cool. If nothing else, check it out because, I mean, you get 30 days for free, for goodness sakes. Be sure to use the promo code podcast and you get your free 30 days of GoToMeeting HD Faces. Now, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, we have with us Fausto Puglisi. He's a good friend. We haven't had him on for some time. Nothing that he's done, I can tell you that. It's just that we're trying to rotate things a little bit, but I thought it was good timing to bring in somebody. He runs a place called Cyber Trading University, and Fausto is one of the original day traders. And when we talk about day trading, we're talking about intraday, possibly minute by minute, tick by tick, you know, bar by bar trading. So I thought we'd bring him in and talk about some of the things that are new for 2012 and how things are shaping up going forward. So anyway, with that introduction, Fausto, how are you?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for having me again.
So let's kind of go through some things. It's been a while, and I know that things are really going well at CyberTrade at University. I know I have a gig over there next Tuesday, I believe it is, and we're going to do a class over there. I'll put that on our website for those of you interested. I'll tell you right now, off the bat, we're going to introduce some of the new trigger trading discussion on how to find places to, you know, what are those points where I can actually buy for a bounce, or where I could short for a sell, for when things are going to actually move lower, if there's ever such a thing in these markets. I'll get you all that information very shortly. You could sign up for this free webinar. But tell me what's going on in towards the end of 2011 and what's going on in 2012 in terms of the actual day trading world.
Well, I mean, it's obviously you can see what's going on with the market itself. It's kind of, we had a nice little rally. It's been quite fun. I mean, some stocks have just been so cheap, Andrew. And in but in the intraday world, there's been some great opportunities. Things have to capitalize in certain stocks and making some big runs. And obviously you can see how the market's been teeter-tottering and been testing some major resistances. But overall, there's been a lot more IPOs have been coming out. We've been doing well, a few of them. Michael Kors, obviously, was one of them that had a nice little pop lately. But a lot of stocks are very inexpensive. They're starting to make some really good moves. I mean, if you remember, going back, I've been doing this for over 16 years, a lot of stocks that we were looking at were in the $80 to $90 price ranges. Brand-name stocks now are in, like, in the teens, low teens, are starting to make some moves. So it's been quite volatile, and it's been a really good market to get into it now, other than what's been happening in the ever since 2008.
Yeah, well, but 2011 was one of those years that it could either be a day trader's dream or a day trader's nightmare, right? Wasn't it? I mean, kind of, you could go both sides of that, right?
Yeah, you can go both sides of it. I mean, if you look at the overall outcome of 2011, I think the market was flat, I mean, from the Dow looking at it. But overall, as a day trader's dream, I mean, trading intraday has always been exciting. There's always been opportunities. People always think when they look at the market, they're like, the market's not doing anything. That's not true. One thing I always tell my students that I train is that there's always something to trade. And I always work off my top 20 list, the percentage gainers and losers. I don't care what the company does. It really doesn't matter. It's not that type of a business. It's the kind of business that you're just going out there and finding what's hot for the day, what's moving, finding things that are up 10, 15, 20% or down 20, 30% a day, and just basically trading that volatility.
So you're looking for, but I think it bears an interest to say that you're looking for scalping. You're looking for small amounts of value to be gained on a large maybe share base. So in other words, I'm not talking about thousands of dollars and millions of dollars. I'm saying you're looking for, hey, if we can get 20 cents on, let's say, 500 shares, I'm just picking that number, okay? Well, that's $100 that you make right there. Okay, great. And if you do that throughout the day, that's a good thing. Or if you can ride something, right? We're not talking about, looking for a 30% pop on your investment on each time you trade something.
No, you're absolutely right. Most people, like, when we talk and when we try to compliment another trader, we don't talk about, like, oh, he made 30% of his money. You're absolutely right. We don't say that. We would say, like, oh, he always makes $1,000 a day. That guy always makes money, $1,000 a day. And when we look at his traders, to make $1,000 a day is $250,000 a year, which is not bad for some of us. We wish we could do that. See, we don't look at it, oh, we made 10% today or 2% today. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right, right. So it's really I remember all the way back to many times that we talked, it's about making a day's pay, right? So if you make $200 a day, you know, you're making 50 grand a year.
Around, that's right.
You know, depending on what it is. Obviously, if you lose $200 a day, you're losing 50,000 a year too. But one of the things that, you know, we've seen is that there has been a, I guess it was 3-4 years ago, there was a lifting of the uptick rule on the short selling, right? So, you know, when that happened, I was like, what is that going to mean exactly? And how's that going to play out? It didn't play out so well. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, as a trader and as someone who's involved in markets?
Well, the downtick rule was implemented back in 1929. So they kind of they finally got rid of it. It actually was quite fun when they first did it, because it did cause a lot of crazy volatility. A lot of people were kind of blaming the crash of 2008 because of it, because now people were shorting stocks. But I think they kind of waived one of the big rules, which I thought was totally wrong, which was the naked shorts. You know what I'm talking
right.
about?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the naked shorts, which obviously, and if some people don't know what that means, is it's that they're shorting stock, which you don't have an inventory. So they're kind of selling something they don't own. See, for you to short, you have to, you're borrowing stock from somebody and selling something that someone else has owned. When naked shorts, they're selling something that nobody owns. They're just able to sell it and eventually have to cover that short. So that's a naked short. So they kind of got rid of that rule.
Good. I mean, because essentially what you could do there is you could run a stock into the ground and never have to really cover it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what was happening. And, right. and that's where things were wrong.
The brilliance of our regulatory system, huh?
Exactly. and you finally realize that now, right?
Right. Exactly. Hello. Good morning. You know, the whole thing with whatever that company was, UBID or whatever, I forgot who it was.
I do.
No, it wasn't Baidu. It was some of these other guys. UBID, I do. Anyway, one of these guys got totally toasted on that deal, you know, where somebody was just targeting the company and they took it down pretty hard. So, but now, you know, we don't have that.
It's very easy to do, by the way, Andrew.
How do you do it?
It's very easy to do that.
What, the naked short?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you got deep pockets, a lot of these big funds, if you really want to take down a stock, you know, with doing that, they did that. I remember back in the early 1990s, when they had a lot of these IPOs coming out, a lot of these hedge funds were doing that on IPOs. They were crushing them, you know, selling the hell out of it. And it's funny, but they never thought about and actually I just found out recently, if they just went to collect the shares, mm-hmm. and tell them to deliver the shares, they couldn't do it. And if they couldn't deliver it, they would have to cover their short, and they would have been crushed. So,
and that's why you see sometimes a company that goes out and they're requesting to redeem full share in terms of their certificates, right? Everything has to be in certificate form. And
exactly.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to do an absolute inventory count, I guess. And try to spook the hell out of the other guys on the other side, right?
Right. And then what happens, if they don't have the stock to deliver, they're in big trouble. So they got to go out in the market and buy it back. And that can cause what's called a short squeeze.
Short squeeze. Yeah, short squeeze is fun. And there's a lot of those going on in the market. Although short interest ratio on S&P stocks has been down significantly lately. And by the way, that's a bit of a contrary indicator, right? So when you see a big short interest ratio on the index, it means that a lot of players are going in there short. But that also means that those smart guys out there, and we've talked about this, are going to try to target you. Target the markets, I should say, to squeeze the shorts because you can get a much more exacerbated move on that. Do you like going after, or do you care about going after a stock? And when I say going after, it sounds negative, but do you care about investing in a stock and looking at what their short interest is?
Well, I don't invest. I trade.
Okay. So when you trade, do you look at the short interest?
Not necessarily. Depends what kind of trader you are. That's a strategy that maybe somebody might like to do if you're really good at it. And if there's anything that you want to do, if that's something that you like, well, your listeners have to understand, that's something that takes time and practice. I really don't have time to sit there and look at, you know, all these types of stipulations unless if it's something that I'm specifically targeting and I got the time to do it. Me, obviously you know me that I'm a short-term trader. What I try to do is I like to trade the pre-market, like to see what happens, what's going on in the pre-market, because I have that VIP access, which a lot of the listeners, I could be happy to show them if they would want to see how it works, have access to that, see what's going on, trading what's on the most volatile market on the percentage gainers and losers, and just trade for that, you know, first 15, 20, 30 minutes and make that day's pay. But, you know, once again, that's just my style. Now, another style I might have, I like to trade stocks that are, you know, it's called bottom fishing, stocks that get really crushed. Maybe they bounce back. Some people might like to trade earnings announcements. Some people like to trade stock splits. You know, but the thing is everybody has to understand, and that's what I kind of teach, is that you have to understand the basics of how the market actually works. So depending on what strategy you like, you still got to go back to point A, which is, okay, well, why is it going up? Who's buying it? Who's selling it? Do I have level 2? Do I have level 3? Total view. And that's where people make their mistakes, and that's where people get crushed and burned.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting that you mentioned that you don't care about some of the things behind it. I kind of sometimes think of you when we talk in kind of a world with no gravity. It doesn't matter what's up or down. It doesn't matter what's sideways. You know, it doesn't really affect you. I mean, does it affect us with gravity that we think we're standing on the top of the world? Or what about the guy on the bottom on the other side that's upside down? No, because it's all relative, right? So in your world, it doesn't matter upside down, backwards, whatever. It's directional is what you're working on, right? You're looking at a rebound situation or a bounce. You're looking at possibly a trend move. And again, short-term time frames. And that's all that matters. And the name that's attached to it, you could care less about.
I don't even, first of all, I don't even want to know what the company says.
That's crazy. Nuts.
It'll just make things worse. Every minute I spend trying to analyze what's going on is every second lost of an opportunity to have a game plan, where to get in, where to get out.
Right.
It's a totally different type of job. It's a job where you're looking for the volatility. You're not looking at it as, you know, as a more of a swing trade or more of an investment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people could look at, you know, listen, I love RIM because I still got the BlackBerry. You know, I still believe it's coming up. Some people says, well, I got the Apple. It broke on me. I'm shorting hell out of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I've done all my research.
Right.
Us
right.
as traders, you could see what's happening with RIM. You could see what's happening with Apple. Who cares? As a trader, all we care about is, I have a job. I got to make money today. I got to pay my mortgage. My goal
yeah.
is I have to make my $250,000 or $100,000 a year. How am I going to make my $300, which is going to give me the least amount of risk with the most amount of reward?
Right. You know, it's interesting. It's a bit of a rationalization in a way, because as an investor, let's go to the far extreme of Warren Buffett. And I was talking with a good friend of mine today, and we were talking about the whole idea that, you know, what's your time frame, or what is a time frame? What's an appropriate time frame? And I said, well, if you're Warren Buffett, it doesn't matter. You know, stock can go up 100%, down 100% per se, you know, and his time frame is a long time from now, sometime into the future. It's going to be good, so you don't worry about the interim moves. Whereas you have, as short as you are, a move up may be against you, and you're going to move out of it, whereas somebody else may be moving into it, you know, in that shortened time frame. And it's all a matter of what your time frame is rather than really what type of investor you are. Because it's all the same. If you have one gigantic bar that's a 10-year bar and that's what you're trading versus a 10-minute bar or a tick bar, right?
Or a one-minute bar.
Right.
Absolutely.
So those are all different time frames that you're looking to capitalize on. And it's not good, bad, or indifferent. But I want to rewind for a second. And you mentioned that, hey, I wake up. I do my research. I do this whole list of things that I know you teach in your courses, and you go here and you look here, and who's trading and who's not, and what's liquid, what's not. And then you say, well, I made me trade the first 15, 20 minutes or so of the morning. Now, all kidding aside, I know that's true for a lot of people. They come in, they may do the first hour even, let's say.
Right.
And then they go, I don't know what they do the rest of the time, play golf or knit or go to another job or whatever it is. And then
knit.
And then they come back at about, let's just say, 2:30, about, you know.
Right.
And they start prepping again, or maybe 2 o'clock, we'll say, prepping again, looking at what's going on, and then really only trade from about, oh, we'll say 2:30 to 4. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Or actually, 2:30 is, you know, it's like a pre-market where at least you get an idea of direction, but usually most of the money is being made from like the last 30 minutes of the close, you know, so from 3:30 to 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
So what is your, over the last, let's say, 3 months, 2 months, whatever, your inclination is what? Blow shorts into the close, get long into the close? Because it seems like there's this unbelievable, never-ending, bullish stampede towards the close to move things up? Is that, or is it something different?
Well, it, once again, it depends on the stock that you're trading. So let me tell you, now you're talking about a strategy on how to trade going into the close.
Yep.
This is how 80% of the stocks will move going into the close. What I like to teach my students is that, and what I do when I trade live with my students, I will show them, obviously, we'll look into the stock. Let's say we'll go through our top list. We'll see which one stocks are, you know, that have the least amount of risk with the most amount of reward, you know, have good spreads, have good good price movement, good percentage movement. And what we kind of look for is, okay, what's trading? What has strength? What has weakness? If I'm looking on the big decliners, if I see a stock that's trading at the lows, going into the lows of the day, a 70 to 80% chance that stock is going to crash going into the close. Now, if you trade a stock going into the open, that's trading at the highs of the day, and it's hovering at the highs, you'll see when you get more towards the close, because the buyers are outbeating the sellers, and now they're not going to come in and start kicking in until the end of the day, usually that's going to probably go a lot higher. Obviously, there's no guarantee, but if you go back and you look at a lot of the stock charts, you look at a lot of the intraday charts, and you look at a lot of these stocks, not specifically the ones that were really strong, not the ones that are like, oh, let me see what Fausto said about the stock I traded today, XYBR, whatever it may be. Oh, it didn't do anything, didn't do what Fausto said. That's not true. What it is just like the Dow Jones, just like the composite, like oil, if you see, obviously, when the market's really strong or stocks, the market's really weak, you will see them continue going to the close, and I'll tell you why. What happens is a lot of these traders obviously are holding back orders. They don't want to do anything. They have triggers that are kicking in. The market closes at exactly at 4 o'clock. So what happens is they don't want to be stuck holding that position when the bell rings. So what happens, that's where chaos starts kicking in, and that's when the orders start flowing through because they want to get these orders filled before that bell because they do not want to hold positions overnight. And that's what causes a lot of the mass hysteria going on, let's say. Just like at the open. The open's the same thing. How many of you out there put orders out there, your orders can't get filled at 9:30? The market doesn't know who's out there. They don't know who has an account with E-Signal or this or right. whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, that's what caused that big rally early in the morning. Same thing.
So, you have all these different strategies. I know it's all about trading, obviously. You know, it's all about, how do you actually trade something, and it's all about, movement of the money and directional movement and all that. But, tell me a little bit more about, what it is that, what is it that kind of your vision is moving forward in terms of technology? What's changing? What's happening out there? I know there's a lot of things that have been going on.
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Andrew. First thing I heard that's been going on, because I've been talking to NASDAQ, becoming a lot more closer with them, trying to work, doing some things with them. They told me that, first of all, level 2 is going to be gone, hopefully, in the next probably year. And it's going to be strictly total view. What's happening in the last total view, which I call is level 3, you get 20 times more data. It's not a good, it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. That's going to happen because a lot of people don't have it now. A lot of brokerage firms don't offer it. And NASDAQ and exchanges are trying to build a fair market system. Mm-hmm. If you notice, you watch the Dow Jones. Look when you look at the New York Stock Exchange, it's embarrassing. There's nobody there. It's going to be a museum.
Right. We know that. It's all going electronic. The rest of the world is electronic. The only thing that's still anything with an auction that has that memory of an auction is the New York Stock Exchange. The rest of the world is all electronic based.
It's all electronic, and what happened was the New York Stock Exchange fell behind to not adapt to the rest of the world because, obviously everybody owns seats down there and they don't want to give it up and this and that. But anyway, it's just, and now it's ending up to be that way. And, obviously you could just tell just by the volume. I mean, the NASDAQ does, 4 or 5 times more volume than New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of people don't realize this, but do you know a lot of the stocks you trade on in New York do trade on the NASDAQ market too?
Right.
A lot of people don't know that.
Well, it's not even that they're dual registered. It's that they're cross registered. So you have the ability to trade it on either platform.
Right. You can trade on either platform, and whichever one has the most liquidity to trade, they'll trade on that exchange. And that's why everyone has to realize and learn this, that if you want, because what's happening, a lot of people out there are taking matters in their own hands. They don't want to deal with mutual funds, whatever it is. People have these small accounts, but they have to realize, okay, you have to understand how the market works. And what's happening, a lot of the technology out there, with today's technology, you could start having access to these exchanges and start trading them. So you're going to be able to see a lot more. What I've been preaching and teaching a lot more and more now these days, I'm teaching a lot more level 3, mm-hmm. which is showing where all the big block orders are. Everybody thinks like, how do you handle all this high velocity trading, all this these big orders that you can't see? You could see them, it's just you don't have the right technology. You're not using the right platform. And that's what I've been more or less focusing on teaching these past couple of days.
Yeah,
and it's been actually a little bit easier.
Well, I mean, that's important. I mean, at the end of the day, you and I could trade for our own accounts, and so could all of our listeners all day long. But at the end of the day, it's where the institutions, the big money is trading that actually moves things into one direction or the other. I mean, that's just the fact.
Yeah, and you're not going to hear it on CNBC. You're not going to hear it on Bloomberg. You're not going to see it on the on your local BlackBerry. You need to have the right tools, trading tools to do that.
Right.
And but once again, another problem with that is that as adults, a lot of us are getting back to the trying to teach them how to ride a bicycle. And what's happening, if you haven't been up with today's technology and what's going on with these new platforms are out there, some of it can be quite overwhelming. So that's something I also try to kind of mechanically teach people, because it's not the most exciting for me to teach, Andrew, but you really have to understand how to water some of these platforms down, because some of them like to show off everything. For a long time,
you've
been trading for a while.
Right.
I mean, anyone that comes from just from a green and a red button, they hit buy and sell. Now, next thing you know, they got heat seekers, they got 20,000 different indicators, and they just want to show everything off, and that's where you have to cut it out. 80% of stuff you don't even need.
I hear you. Well, Cyber Trading University, I know that you do all sorts of training, different things. I know we're going to be with you next week, and I know that you do a variety of intro courses. And you know what, folks? Here's the deal. That I would take Fausto up on his free intro courses, only because, if nothing else, you get to see a whole different side of the market. It's kind of like lifting the hood and seeing what's back there, or kind of going into the kitchen and seeing what's happening before your food comes out, right?
You know, how long did we know each other? And you were in the same boat a long time ago. You were a tough cookie to crack, too. I remember.
Oh, that was probably, I don't even know what year that was. What year was that? That was 15 years ago?
No. 15 years
something
ago.
Like that. It was about that, yeah.
And you, and that's one of the reasons why, like I said, we became very good friends over the years.
Yep.
Because obviously people have to understand this stuff. And nothing really hasn't changed, you know, other than the mentality of trading.
I hear you.
Yes.
I hear you. Cyber Trading University. Make sure to check it out, cybertradinguniversity.com. And check out, we'll again have some information about the free webinar that we're doing next Tuesday. And then it'll be, I guess, you're going to record it or something so people can see it after
that? Yes, it'll be recorded. So if anybody wants to register for it, you can give us a call at 877-70-CYBER. You can register on the homepage of cybertradinguniversity.com. But we're going to have Andrew coming on, and he's going to be doing a webinar. It will be recorded, so if you do get this podcast a little too late, it's no problem. We'll, as long as you still register for it, we'll get you the you'll have access to the recording to it.
Yeah. All right, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it, Fausto. All right, thanks, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And just to make sure that you have the information, there are sign-up forms all over the website over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go check that out. And I think that you'll enjoy it. We're going to talk about actually trigger points and support resistance zones, and not the usual ones that you see, not the usual ones that you know about in terms of, hey, look at where the stock was, look where there was some basic support levels. Those are good. But how do you see inside of those, and how do you actually identify where the buyers really are or the sellers are really going to hit? And are those going to be either good supporting zones or are they weak? So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the some stocks. I'll give you some great stocks, hopefully, that will be high in the quality in the fundamental area, as well as we'll talk about some technical breakout potential and just a little bit of a lesson and have a little bit of a give and take. You'll be able to ask questions in our session as well. Well, I did promise you, I'm going to get up for this, I think, because I'm aggravated. I did promise you, hang on. I promised you that I had something to get off my chest. That's right. I am aggravated. I am pissed off. I am just so disgusted. How's that for a start? I am just so disillusioned by the ECB. You know, if the ECB, I've told you this before, if the ECB was an organization that was under rules that they had to abide by, they would be investigated for fraud. They would be investigated for outright thievery. And, you know, somebody would be put in jail. But the good news is for them that that can't happen. It can't happen because they're a government. Now, here's the problem. With the latest deal in Greece, what the ECB is doing is they are figuring out a way to make sure that if there is a debt exchange, they're going to come out whole. In other words, they're doing what's called, and when you see this in the news, a debt swap or a bond swap, where the bonds that they have bought recently to pump money into the Greece situation with making sure that they had enough funding when they came out to market, they are actually going to say, hey, you know what? Those bonds that we bought, even though you're giving a 70% haircut to other people, to the private investors and other investors, we are not going to take a loss on. They're going to get back their money. Plus, hold on to your seats, folks, a profit. Yep, they're going to profit on the bonds that they bought because they're going to get back the full face amount on that deal, and they bought it at a discount. Now, you're probably saying, what in the world is going on with that? So the 70% discount that's being taken is basically being used to fund the ECB because the ECB in their charter is not supposed to be directly buying any kind of bonds from sovereigns. Now, again, back up. Yes, that's true. Well, they did, didn't they? Well, yes and no. We could say it was just a simple loan if they get their money back. If they take a loss, then it was an investment in a security, if you will, that had risk. And they can't, by charter, take that kind of risk. So the ECB
is maneuvering, and that's what some of this is going on, is maneuvering to make sure that they get all of their money back so they don't break their charter. So they did break their charter, but they knew in the back of it, all of this, that they wouldn't have to. Some of the pressure that's going on to have the haircuts by the private investors is clearly the ECB, because they need to make up the differential. It's a joke. It's really quite disgusting, because they basically gave the money without any risk at the same time as they were giving money and as they were behind this, showing investors that it was a good investment idea, giving investors the false, under the false pretense that this was something that they were behind as well, but not ever telling anybody that if there was going to be any kind of haircut or any kind of loss, that they would not take it. It's outright thievery. It really is. And we just go along our merry way, and then this is going to be allowed to happen, and okay. What happens the next time? Well, first of all, I don't think anybody's going to be, you know, looking at this in the same light if it happens in Portugal or Italy. They're going to be, whoa, wait a second. We don't care that you're behind this, because you're really just going to, you know, hold yourself out here, and you're going to leave us holding the bag. So, unfortunately, this is going to hurt a lot of hedge funds who are also not going to be able to collect on their various insurance positions that we call, CDS, where they bought some positioning to protect themselves about principal loss, et cetera. And, you know, I don't know what other world that this would be allowed on, but it is not what we'd call investing. It's just not. Now, the good news is, I got to tell you something. I feel so good about right now equities in the U.S., regardless of the stimulus that's going on and all the other shenanigans that are going on, because at least it's somewhat of a fair game. Yeah, you look at the bonds and the things over in the Europeans, and you're like, oh my gosh, these could be manipulated that way. What do I want to get involved in that crap for? Yeah, it may go up. As a matter of fact, one of the best investments this year has been the sovereign debt of countries like Italy and Portugal. Yeah, it's great, because they just got crushed and they're just being brought up because there is the hope that there'll be a bailout and bailouts will continue, etc. But somebody's got to lose on this deal. Somebody somewhere. Now, if you bought it at the bottom, you're in great shape. If you bought it anywhere else, you may be in really bad shape. Because even if you took a 50% cut, and if you bought it 50% down and now you have to take a 70% total haircut on it, you're down 20, 30% on it. Just on that position. Again, without any kind of ability at this point to collect because on the CDS exposure, because what's happening is that they are basically going to do everything they can not to call it a default, call it voluntary. a mandatory voluntary. Anyway, so the ECB, by the way, if I could, I'd have a little, maybe I should, I'll put a little dartboard in there and put some of the big boys' picture on there and just start throwing them out all day, because whether or not, you know, it is a good investment or not, whether or not it was a great opportunity at the bottom, whether, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I think what they do to the investment mentality and the overall sentiment in terms of, investing in these kind of instruments has really been soured dramatically. I don't care what anybody in the news says and what they're saying about how great things are there. It is absolutely a shanda. As my grandmother would say, it's a shanda that they would do such a thing and pretty much just rip off everybody all over the place. So ECB, you get a big New York-based raspberry from me. All right. Let's talk about a couple of more things. I want to talk about what's happening next week. We're going to have something on, try to have these themes all the time, right, on the disciplineinvestor.com. We're going to have something called a natural gasathon. Now, next week, I had a long conversation this weekend with Frank Curzio, who did just an unbelievable in-depth review of a lot of natural gas, not only the potential for pricing for natural gas, the commodity, but also the companies that work within that area. So what I did was I thought, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea to have a natural gasathon next week? Natural gas was something that was just, nobody really wanted to deal with it after the last year or so, it just dropping off, and about a 25-30% drop off in the beginning of this year, and then it picked up about 10-12%. And there was more fines and problems, and then there's nobody really being able to utilize natural gas in automobiles because it's just there's no pumps and there's no engines that are being made in mass quantities. But there's something that you should know, something I talked about with Frank this weekend, and it has to do with the conversion of old trucks, the savings that you get from major corporations by converting into natural gas, even with the extra cost of conversion, and the opportunity that may be ahead of us over the next two or three years. Now, in particular, depending on who becomes president, will actually power this as well. So when you look at natural gas these days, I think you need to look at it a little bit differently, because now the natural gas prices in the U.S. are ridiculously low, $2.50, $2.60. If you look around the world and you look at the natural gas pricing and the usage, it is much higher. Some parts of the world, natural gas is $15 per unit, as opposed to the $2.50 that we're seeing here. That's a big difference. Now, one of the things that's happening is there are companies that are actually in the business, like you see the Baltic Dry Index. Well, this LNG, liquid natural gas providers, carriers. So what they do is they take the compressed version of natural gas, to make it very simple, and they actually transport it somewhere, because it's a less volatile form and it's highly compressed. Therefore, you can transfer a lot more of it in a smaller amount of space. They're taking the LNG and they're shipping it around the world. Now, China last week came out with a discussion that they're doing some additional research. What else would we call it? We'd call it drilling. We'd call it exploration. And they are going to be developing their entire natural gas program there. That's great. The problem is it's going to take them 5 to 6 years to even get anything going. That's by their commentary. In Japan, what happened is they basically shut down their whole entire energy program, which was based on nuclear energy, and we know the reasons for that. Now, where are they going to get their next supply from? Well, they're going to natural gas too. And they only have a small percentage of natural gas that they actually utilize from domestic sources, so they also have to import. Where are they going to import it from? Well, they're going to import it from the cheapest source possible. Now, when you add up the day rates, which have gone up dramatically for shipping it with the LNG carriers, and you put in the price that we have in the U.S. for natural gas, you have to say, it makes a lot of sense still to buy the natural gas from the U.S., have it shipped over to whether it's Asia in China or any of the outlier countries there, Japan, et cetera. It makes a lot of sense because let's say it comes to $6 per unit versus $15 from somewhere else. So the natural gas providers who have, like a Chesapeake, for example, which cut down on their overall, exploration and production, have got to now start thinking about, hey, maybe that's something we did a little prematurely. Now, Chesapeake is a little bit of a different situation because they were having a big problem. They have a heavy debt load. They're heavily leveraged. At the same time, the problem was that natural gas prices were going down and down and down. And as natural gas prices went down and this leverage that they have was just extraordinary, they are no longer meeting their nut. What they had to do was they had to shut down production. They had to sell off some of their properties. They had to go along and do a lot of things that they didn't want to do. Bad for Chesapeake. But now that they did so and they collected billions of dollars in order to probably, as the way it looks right now, pay off the upcoming notes they have and clean up their balance sheets a little bit, they're not under as much pressure. Chesapeake being one of the biggest producers of natural gas. But there's a lot of other companies out there that are not only involved in the exploration and production of natural gas, but you have the shippers. You have the fuel companies like Clean Energy Fuels, which does the pumps and T. Boone Pickens. And we have, for example, the companies that make the engines. We have the peripheral companies that make the parts for the engines, the gas tanks, et cetera, that are going to go into natural gas vehicles. So there's all sorts of different potential companies that you have in this area that really have been depressed and may not stay there forever. Now, I got to tell you something. With the price of oil going up, it lends itself to higher natural gas prices only because of natural gas usage. The differential in price between natural gas and crude oil is dramatic, one of the widest it's been in a very long time, very long time. And when you look at that spread, it makes sense for the conversion to take place. In addition, the other thing is that a lot of companies, and especially in the Northeast,
they run, the factories run on natural gas. And when they have the choice between natural gas or coal or other, you know, ways of which to power their various factories, when they look at the natural gas prices these days, they have to say, you know, that's getting kind of in the ballpark of where we're going to save some money. And as companies are doing what they can to produce a much better margin rate for investors, which is the big name of the game these days, because revenues have not really grown, but EPS is doing great. Well, why does that happen? That happens because of margin expansion. And we're looking for margin expansion because we have to be concerned about the European situation affecting the U.S. And even though we are seeing a positive GDP, it's pretty pathetic, the GDP in the U.S. Even though we're seeing an 8.3% overall unemployment rate, that's pretty pathetic. Even though we're seeing retail sales move up a little bit, even though they came in at half what was expected, it's still pretty pathetic. So economies are growing, but they're growing much more slowly than they really can be and they should be to maintain a very, you know, a very good level of overall growth and economic activity for the various countries. And again, we talked about how China is slowing down dramatically. India just, you know, dropped off a cliff and they're having to reinvigorate their economy at the expense of potential inflation. Same thing happening with a lot of Latin America. And, you know, when you look at all this and put it all together, then you have to add the fact that there is some, you know, commodity-based movement that will happen. And finally, I've talked about this. I've written about this. If you've been paying attention, if whether you get the daily kind of condensed version of this through email or you get your an RSS feed or you go to Twitter or whatever you do or go right to the site, The Disciplined Investor, we've really been focusing on this natural gas for the last month or so. And I think it's time to really take a look at this as an interesting opportunity. You know, I'm not pushing anything. I'm not telling you to buy something. And we'll talk about this next week. And make sure to go to the site every single day. We'll have something new about natural gas. Every day next week, even though it's a shortened week, we'll have things up, a couple of different stocks here and there, some discussion about natural gas, some charts you need to be aware of, some outlook, et cetera. So we're going to do that all throughout the week. And then we're going to have Frank Herzio come on next week's podcast and just give us an absolute lesson on what's going on, because he is just a fountain of knowledge when it comes to this. So make sure to, you know, be a part of that and make sure to subscribe to at Andrew Horowitz at Twitter. Just go to Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the one to look at. Trigger trading is also another one to look at, and make sure that you are, you know, online with the RSS feed or come back to The Disciplined Investor. Book it as a favorite. The other thing I want to mention to you is I got some questions about PE ratio and some questions about, hey, what's the story with PE ratio? A gent wrote me and said, hey, you know what? What's the story with PE ratio? I'm going to give you the quick down and dirty real right here, but I also want to mention any questions that you have about basic fundamentals or technicals or, you know, things that are kind of like the beginner's guide to investing, you can go over to The Winning Investor over on iTunes or any other place you want to get it. It's a weekly podcast that we put out. It's a 5-minute to 7-minute how-to investing 101 kind of thing to look at, and they're small little nuggets of information that will get you a little bit more knowledge, and you can either subscribe to it or you can go over and just pick the ones that you want. They're all listed. There's 100 of them or so on all sorts of different topics about investing. But this listener wrote, he said, you know, what is the story with PE ratio? I'm having a hard time understanding it. It's a pretty easy discussion. Very easy discussion. PE ratio stands for price earnings. Now, by itself, I've always talked about this, it's meaningless, absolutely meaningless. But basically what you do is you take the price of the stock and you take the earnings of the stock per share, right? So it's price per share and earnings per share. And you do a quick division. And what you find is, let's say that a stock has a $10 price and $100, $100 price and a $10 of earnings, $100 price, $10 earnings. You have a PE multiple of 10, meaning that the price is 10 times the earnings. That's all. Now, what does that mean? Well, on itself, nothing. A lot of people say, well, the PE is 45. It's very rich for us. But compared to what, fella? Listen, don't ever listen to anybody that just talks about PE ratio on its own. If you're going to look at price earnings ratios, well, at least combine it with the growth rate of the company. In other words, look at the potential growth, because if a company has a growth rate of 20% a year and you have a PE multiple of 10, well, that's pretty good. You cut it in half. Price earnings to growth. Just do more division. And what you have now is a 0.5. That's pretty good. Anything under a 1 is fine, because what you're seeing is that the company is able to continue growing their earnings by a much bigger rate than the PE would suggest. So when you look at PE alone, a PE of a company like a value stock, maybe like a bank, or maybe depending on the bank, or maybe a dividend play, maybe a consumer staple, is much different than a technology company. Technology companies have a much greater earnings potential over time from a growth standpoint, whereas maybe a company that's involved in the food industry does not. So when you compare the two of them, you say, hey, one of them is a 5 PE and one of them is a 22 PE. I'm buying the one that's a 5. Well, that doesn't make any sense. What does that one have to do with the other? So keep that in mind, that PE is very simply just a look at the price and the earnings multiple. It's the division of the two. If a PE is at 5 and the stock is trading at 5, well, obviously, you know, you have to look at that and say, okay, well, we have a stock that's 5. We have obviously earnings are only 1. 5 times multiple. 5 times the amount of the earnings is the price of the stock. Now, you can look at the price of the stock on its own and look at the historic PE ratio and say, okay, that stock used to be a 20 and now it's a 5. So maybe the price is a bit cheaper than it should be. But again, why is that? What happened? Did the earnings move or did the price move or did both? So again, PE ratio on its own, I think, is worthless. When you combine it with something like the growth, well, that becomes a little bit better. But again, that's just one view of the stock. And you have to compare the stock to other stocks in the industry, where its range of PE has been. You have to look at a variety of things when you look at the earnings and the growth rates of the company to make a little bit more of a sound decision. Anyway, with that, go over to The Winning Investor, my friend. Check out the podcast there. I know we have one on price earnings ratio, and that will give you a lot more information. Well, until next week, I thank you for joining me. Make sure that if you haven't done so already, go check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. If you like the things that we're talking about here, we manage money. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You can go check it out over at the Disciplined Investor. There is a quick 12-minute video tutorial that will give you all the insights. And if you think, well, maybe it's time I need to get back in, or maybe I want to short the market, I'm not sure what to do. You know what? That's what we do on a regular basis. So it's very easy, nicely transparent. You get to see what's going on all the time because it's your account. And we have a private blog just for clients that tell you what we're doing, why we're doing it, and all the things that really, you know, are more pertinent to your portfolio. We'll see you next week with Frank Curzio. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to put some comments over on iTunes. Send me emails if you want at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks. Have a profitable week, and hopefully you're going to enjoy a long weekend. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.